Random House Audio presents Street Smarts, Adventures on the Road and in the Markets by Jim Rogers. Read for you by Michael Bybee. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, "Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them, on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things. The hand that mocked them and the heart that fed, and on the pedestal these words appear, 'My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair.' Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away." Ozymandias, Percy Bysshe Shelley. Chapter 1. Portrait of the Investor as a Young Man. My hometown, Demopolis, sits in the heart of the Alabama canebrake, where the Black Warrior and the Tombigbee Rivers meet. The largest city in Marengo County, it lies in the center of a region of Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi, known historically as the Black Belt, so named for the layer of naturally rich, thick, black prairie soil that almost 200 years ago nourished the growth of vast cotton plantations, some of which outlasted slavery, none of which survived the boll weevil. It was in that soil, when I was a boy, that my friends and I would dig for bait before setting off to spend the day fishing. Channel catfish are omnivorous and will strike at just about anything they can smell. They are able to smell just about everything. And earthworms, on a hot summer day, are a lot easier to gather than crickets. I must have been 8 years old, and we were digging in the backyard of my house when my cousin Wade, who was about 10 months older than I, ventured a remark that, while entirely incomprehensible at the time, remains vivid to me to this day. "If we keep digging," he said, "we'll end up in China." I was not ignorant of the fact that the world was round, but not until I was able to consult the globe, I was an enthusiastic researcher even then, did I come to appreciate that directly opposite Alabama, on the other side of the planet, sprawled the vast landmass of the People's Republic, where, covered in dirt and drenched with sweat, I would eventually emerge if I were energetic enough to keep digging. Decades have intervened since then, and I have followed a more circuitous route, but on the very doorstep of China is where I find myself living today, the father of two little blue-eyed blondes who speak Mandarin as fluently as they speak English. How I came to be a permanent resident of Singapore is a story about digging of a different kind. Excavation perhaps less arduous, though no less energetic. It is a result of my endless effort to experience firsthand the inner workings of the world, to get out and unearth the real story, to explore it all for myself. I have circumnavigated the globe twice now, once by motorcycle, once by car, investigating the world at ground level, charting the shifting circumstances of more than 100 nations in the course of those 5 years. For me, understanding history and its consequence has not been an armchair endeavor, but a hands-on adventure. It has led to great personal and material rewards, and it inevitably led me here, far from the backwoods of Alabama, to this largely Chinese outpost on the southern tip of the Malay Peninsula. If history affirms anything, it is the proposition put forth by the Greeks that nothing endures but change. It originated with the philosopher Heraclitus in the 6th century B.C., when he informed us aphoristically that it is not possible to step twice into the same river. Success in life is measured by the ability to anticipate change, and I came to Singapore in response to the realization that the world is in the midst of a historic shift, a dramatic reshaping of the terrain, a decline of U.S. leadership in the world, and a commensurate rise in Asia. I write this in the midst of a global financial crisis that most of the world's politicians would have you believe is temporary. Things, we are told, will turn around. I will not argue with that. I am here to tell you, simply, that things are unlikely to turn around permanently in your lifetime. The staggering debt loads in many countries will lead to major changes in the way we all live and work. Many old institutions, traditions, political parties, governments, cultures, even nations will decline or collapse or simply disappear, just as has always happened in times of political and economic turmoil. The investment bank Bear Stearns, for instance, was decades old when it went under in 2008. The financial services firm Lehman Brothers, when it founded that same year, had been in business for more than a century and a half. The cave-in of those long-established global corporations exemplifies the changing circumstances faced by many American institutions. Harvard, Princeton, and Stanford, though they might not know it yet, may be heading toward bankruptcy. Museums, hospitals, and other institutions we know and love are headed for trouble, and we are going to see a lot of them vanish in the upheaval, be it financial or economic. Some have labeled me an alarmist, a modern-day Cassandra. But nothing I see in the future needs serve as cause for alarm or even come as a surprise. The winds of change are blowing. They are blowing from the direction of China, and they are blowing in predictable fashion. What we are witnessing is business as usual, history turning a familiar page. And throughout history, such moments of transition have presented opportunities to the attentive, so I am wildly optimistic about many things to come. If you were smart at the start of the 19th century, you made your way to London. If you were smart at the start of the 20th, you packed up and moved to New York. If you are smart at the start of the 21st, you will find your way to Asia. 100 years from now, the cycle of change could lead anywhere. At the end of the first millennium, all the smart people moved to Cordoba, the flower of Islamic Spain, at the time the intellectual center of Europe and the most populous city in the world. I moved to Asia in 2007, and even more significantly, I moved my children here. In their lifetime, a knowledge of Asia will be indispensable to success, and a mastery of Mandarin will prove, throughout the world, as important as the mastery of English does today. Power and influence in the world moved from Great Britain to the United States in the 1920s and 1930s. The loss of British leadership was exacerbated by a financial crisis and political mismanagement, and it was unnoticed by many until 20 or 30 years later. Power and influence are now moving from the United States to Asia, a loss of American leadership accelerated by the same forces, and a change that likewise remains unnoticed by most. The transition to Asia comes at a time of a second historical shift. In the depths of a financial meltdown, the world is on the verge of a transition away from finance itself, a cyclical shift away from financial firms as a source of prosperity. Throughout history, there have been periods where financiers were in charge, and there have been periods where the producers of real goods, farmers, miners, energy providers, lumberjacks, were in charge. In the 50s, 60s, and 70s, before the big bull market, Wall Street and the City of London were backwaters. They will be again. The money shufflers are in decline, and those identified in the Book of Joshua as the hewers of wood and drawers of water will now inherit the earth. Examining the forces of history responsible for the changes in question, embracing the simple hypothesis that nothing goes on forever, I have come to appreciate the observation of another of civilization's great thinkers, Albert Einstein, who said, "Only two things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity." And I'm not so sure about the former. Let us not forget the Cassandra, the Trojan princess who made a nuisance of herself when she warned against dragging the Greek's wooden horse into the city, if remembered for no other attribute, is remembered for having been right. My aim in writing this book, among other things, is to cast light on how we came to be where we are and how individuals can go about educating themselves to prepare for the future. In doing so, I will share with you insights gained over the course of a lifetime in finance, investing, and the pursuit of adventure, lessons I learned growing up, following a road that led from the soil of the Black Belt to the Southeast Asian city-state on the other side of the globe, a lifelong journey in the course of which I made the whole world my backyard. My adventure in the markets began in the spring of 1964. I was a senior at Yale, and I found myself headed to Wall Street in much the same way that I had earlier found myself headed to the Ike.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?